हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 118, Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.4. O most intelligent Uddhava, the living entity called Jiva is part and parcel of me. But due to ignorance, he has been suffering immaterial bondage since time immemorial. By knowledge, however, he can be liberated. Footnote 70. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, bondage and liberation of my Shakti, the Jiva, which are apparent only, is caused by my Avidya Shakti, which produces the imposition of the body, and liberation is produced by my Vidya Shakti, which removes the imposition of the body. This is brought about under the influence of my Shakti, which functions for the pastime of creation and destruction of the universe. That is the explanation of this verse. Though the jiva is my part, or amsa, it should be understood to be different from me, vibhinamsa. I have said, aparyayam itas tvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam daryate jagata. This is my inferior energy. Understand my superior energy, which is different from this inferior energy. It is the jivas by whom the inferior energy is employed for their enjoyment. Bhagavad Gita 7.5. Though the jiva is my shakti, its nature as amsa should be understood from this statement. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. Manas shastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. This eternal jiva, one of my parts, drags with it the senses and the sixth sense called the mind, which are situated in the bewildering prakriti, Bhagavad Gita 15.7. You have mentioned the many living entities in the previous verse. Shruti also says, there are many jivas. Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bahunam yovi dadhati kaman. The Lord is the chief eternal conscious entity among all eternal jivas, and He alone maintains the many jivas. Kathu Upanishad 2.2.13. Why do you call the jiva one in this universe? The jiva shakti or tatastha shakti is one, but from its many expansions appear many jivas. Similarly, the one external energy called maya shakti has two aspects, avidya and vidya, which affect many jivas by expansion into many functions. Just as all the expansions of maya are simply called maya, so all the expansions of the jiva shakti are called jiva. The many expansions of the jiva shakti and maya shakti should be understood to be eternal. The jiva is eternal, but by vidya the jiva becomes liberated. It is said that when avidya is destroyed, the jiva attains liberation. But, quote-unquote, destruction simply means the avidya ceases its influence on a particular jiva, since avidya is eternal. Liberation or nirvan means the jiva merges in Brahman. The jiva is not destroyed. Sayuja means joining with Brahman. In that condition, the jiva's sarup is not destroyed. Vishnu shakti paraprokta kshetra jaya tata para avidya karma samgya samgyaya tritiya shaktir. The Lord has a superior energy. Avidya karma. Another energy called the jiva. And a third energy, the material energy, called Avidya Karma, Vishnu Purana 6761.
Before that sentence, before the first quote, Sayuja means joining, liberation on Nirvana means that he emerges in Brahman. So he's equating liberation, Nirvana, and Sayuja.
They're the same thing. See, is that the, as is being pointed out, he says that it's only externally kind of an aspect that that the jiva is bound and the jiva is liberated. What did he use the term?
These are apparent only.
Yeah, apparent only. So, because the point is the jiva is the jiva. They're transcendentally situated. But their consciousness becomes covered by the avidya shakti. And so, it's because the consciousness is covered, they're identifying in this way. And then, therefore, they have the body in that. But the soul is still in its same transcendental position. But it's acting as if it's bound. Right? Then, when the avidya shakti is removed, you don't have to place there the vidya shakti, because that's eternally there. Right, that's the nature of the jiva, that sat chit, the chit, they always are, you know, that's their position. So, this whole aspect of, you know, that great endeavor for liberation and all that is, you know, some big thing. It's not actually, how you say, real. It's a matter of adjusting the consciousness, and you're naturally in a, you know what I'm saying, it's just like, you're sitting in darkness and all this and that, and how to remove the dark, just turn on the light. You know, that's all. It's not that the darkness goes, it's a separate endeavor. It's not you turn on the light and then you have to open the window and kind of sit there and use your arms to kind of get the darkness out the window and all that so the light can gradually come up. And you know what I'm saying? It's just, so the jivas in, they're always transcendentally situated. It's just, it appears that they're in ignorance. That's why if they change the consciousness in a moment, they're not. You know, they're not conditioned. So, that's why we mentioned is that this whole thing is, oh, it takes many lifetimes, and all it takes is a moment. You just have to change the consciousness and accept it. So it takes many lifetimes because the jiva maintains the attachments and thinks that they'll give benefit. So because they think they'll give benefit, that strong or that, you know, that full faith in the holy name or in the devotional process doesn't manifest. Therefore, they don't remove the anarthas. You know, they basically cultivate the anarthas because they think that these things will be important. You know, it'll be discussed. Oh, you know, you have to have this, you have to have that, and without, you know, without an education, you can't get a job, and all this, and then how will you do devotional service? As if it's, you know, as if there's examples in the Bhagavatam of someone who couldn't do devotional service because he didn't have a job. You know what I'm saying? You know, so that's the problem. Or you know, without good qualities and all that, then how will devotional service go on? Because if that's the case, how did Madhurari the hunter become a devotee? So the whole point that bhakti is transcendental, because is transcendental, and the jiva also is transcendental, that faith doesn't manifest. Because of that, these anarthas don't go away. And therefore, it may take many, many lifetimes. But technically, you need one moment. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have the child, right? And you have some medicine. They want to take their medicine? No. How long does it take to take the medicine?
1 minute.
Right? It's a moment, literally. How long does it take before they take the medicine?
Forever.
Yes. That's the whole point. So that's what we're dealing with here. You just have to do it. And then it's done. Right? You know how you say? The Nike Sutra. You know, so it's a the Mahavakya, right?
modern
Mahavakya, yes. So that's the position of the jiva. So now this other thing of then liberation, as conceived from the material platform, means that there is no body, there's nothing. Right? And so if you're focusing more on that there is no material form, that aspect of no body, then that will be called liberation. If you're focusing on there's nobody means there's no existence of a living entity, then that's nirvana. Yeah. It's just a matter of how extreme you're taking it. So in other words, the reaction to the difficulties of the material world, then the material reaction is liberation. But it's more, a little bit more of a balanced, but it's still just a reaction. But when you take that to extreme, that you're even reacting to that, then it goes out to nirvana. Just everything's destroyed. There's nothing. So it's a very full manifestation of the mode of ignorance. So the avidya shakti is like at its maximum there. Right?
What is understood over here by saying that the one external energy, Maya Shakti, has two aspects, avidya and vidya. And it is this vidya of the Maya Shakti which awards liberation to the jiva.
It means it's, you have the energy and it acts either in knowledge or in ignorance. And so that's what covers the living entity.
Yes. Maya Shakti, avidya, potency.
No, it says it has both.
It has both. I was thinking that Yoga Maya is vidya. She wants bhakti and then she wants liberation and then what it is.
You have that aspect, but the point is it's one energy. So the point, the material energy, therefore she can remove. Like, I think it's Lord Chaitanya tells Maya Devi that now at that particular point in his pastimes, now she can remove the ignorance that's there covering the verses that show his position.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, so that's what then when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then meets Lord Chaitanya, then he starts quoting these verses. He knows the verses about Lord Chaitanya. He had no idea what they meant. Right? And he's the greatest scholar in India at the time. And he doesn't know what they mean. So when Maya Devi removes that, and so that means not to, when you remove the one, the knowledge is there. So it's not that it's two separate things, as they're saying. It's just avidya is always there. So since Maya Shakti is eternal, that means the avidya Shakti is eternal. Right? Yeah. Because the spiritual world is not working on vidya. It's working on prema. Not that they don't have knowledge. But you see that the knowledge is what works here. That's where that is. That's why it's said that when you get to the liberated stage, you offer that knowledge to Krishna. Right? The jiva shakti, also you see, is that there's one maya shakti, but it has so much variation. So the jiva shakti is one shakti, but there's many manifestations. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, so that's why the nature of it is the same. So you can talk about all jivas in one as, you know, as Krishna does here, anyway, as he, as the singular. Because the nature is the same, just like you can talk of dogs. You know, it's one nature. Does that make sense? Okay. The jiva shakti exists in various conditions. Oh, here. Yaya kshetra shaktihi sa ta karate mena vartate. The jiva shakti exists in various conditions, in various bodies, by the maya shakti. From the statement of the Vishnu Purana is understood that the jiva shakti is generally controlled by maya shakti for accomplishing the pastime of creation of the universe. That is stated in the verse. The jiva is bound by avidya. Avidya is beginningless because karma is beginningless. When liberation takes place, avidya has an end for that particular jiva. Liberation, because it is produced, has a beginning, but because it is indestructible, it has no end. Sadartha Darshan. 11.11.4. So you're talking about the eternal aspect. the beginningless. So one is you're talking about, it doesn't have a beginning because it started in the transcendental, from the transcendental position, but it does have an end, right? And won't come back. The other one may have a beginning that now you're liberated, but it has no end, so it's eternal. Does that make sense? So one you're looking at, it's always been there from its beginning. The other one you're looking at it, that it has no end. Does that make sense? Sutra 2342. Mantra Varanat. Mantra of the mantras, Varanat, from the description. The jiva is an amsha because this is stated in a Vedic mantra, Sutra Prakashika. Sutrakar proves the jiva to be an amsa by citing the Vedas. Sri Govind Bhasya. Siddhanta. Padosya Vishva Bhutani. All beings are one quarter amsa of Vishnu. Rig Veda 10.9.3. This wording of the mantra varna, says that the jiva is an amsha of Brahman. The word pada is synonymous with amsha. In this Vedic mantra, the plural sarva bhutani is used to indicate that there are many jivas, whereas the word amsha is in the singular in the previous sutra to indicate a class. This is the case in other texts as well. Right? So when you give a class, you just do it in singular. Right? But at the same time, he's using the plural to indicate all the jivas together. Right? Does that make sense? So here, so does that make point? So that's the point being made in the verse. Does that make sense? Of course, the question is, what does the one quarter mean? But that's not the discussion. Right? So the one quarter is that one quarter of Vishnu, because the full three quarters is the spiritual world and one quarter is the material world. So the jivas then, means that we're discussing in the Veda, are the ones that are here. So they're the one quarter. Well, the three quarter is the spiritual energy. So those jivas are, therefore, in the fire of the internal energy. Well, the ones here are not they're in the fire, but of material energy, not as pleasant. Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference, 10.87.20. The individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Right, so the sages who understand this position of the natural liberated position of the living entity, then they take up worship of the Lord. Because that means he's the energy of the Lord, the energy is eternal, so therefore the whole thing works, is appreciated. So then they take up worship of the Lord. While those who don't accept the Lord, then they won't understand this point. Does that make sense? So therefore they think it's some other position. Yeah? No? Sutra 2343. Api smartyate. You had something? No. Api also, smaryate, in the Smriti Shastra. Smritis also confirm this. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar proves the jiva to be an amsa by citing the Shrutis, right? So first we've cited the Veda, now the other. This amsa is Atma, that which by the grace of the Lord reveals itself to itself and also reveals others. Yes. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The jivas are my part and are part and eternal in the world of jivas. Bhagavad Gita 15.7. By saying that the jiva is eternal, sanatana, the Lord refutes the idea that the jiva arises as an upadi, Brahman under limiting conditions. Thus it can be concluded that the jiva is an umsa of the Lord, dependent on a relationship with him. His role as an agent is dependent on the Lord. Right? So, if you're saying that they're eternal, then there can't be the point of that they're created by Brahman being covered by some kind of limiting condition, right? By Maya, by illusion. You know, so the pot, you know, in the ether and all that one doesn't apply. So now if they also are eternal, then they are coming from the Lord. Then the point is, because it says here part and parcel, then the thing is they're dependent on Him, because they're part of Him. So He's the complete whole. They're not. And so then Him being an agent, as was being discussed before, right? That's dependent upon the Lord. Does that make sense?
So they say that He's not in Italy from Brahman.
They say He's not, or they say He is?
No. We say that He's not. They
yes,
say
yes,
is.
Yes.
But then we say that the Jiva is answer of the Lord.
Yes.
But we in the same way can say that Jiva is the answer of Brahman, because Brahman is also the Lord.
Yes.
That's not the body.
No, but it's not. But the point is that the, how you say? It's like the exactness. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the previous one.
Mm.
Is that, you know, we're discussing these particular things and we hear that, you know, we've heard that. So what's being pointed out is the Jiva is a part of the Supreme. It's coming from the Lord. It's the Amsa of the Lord.
Mm.
So that we've heard and all that. But then you have this funny part where it says He's one quarter. And we've always heard He's 1/10,000 at the tip of the hair. So, you know, like this. So then immediately then the mind goes there.
Mm.
You know, over the words. But the point being made is that He's part and parcel of the Lord. But that verse happens to be talking, who knows what the context is. You know, that it's giving like that. So, the same way is that when we see that the Lord, the living entity is part and parcel of the Lord, then we look at that exact point. We don't have to catch other points of there. That's why you see here is that they'll say the exact point. Then they may quote the same thing and move to the next point. You know, or they'll go through. That's why they're going through like one increment at a time. So that all the things are covered. So let's say there's illusory concepts on the Jiva. Let's say there's 10 different ways you could be illusion. So it'll go through each one at a time. Because if you just say something that does cover all 10 in one statement, then you may apply it to one area, but not to another. So that's why it's so exact. Right? So, yeah. So that aspect of an upadi, that's the point that's being made. But that they're part and parcel of the Lord, so that's what we want to bring out. So that eternalness that is there, and that what you saw before is an agent, so you're seeing is that they're the agent, not the material energy. Why are they the agent? Because they're part and parcel of the Lord. Is that so they're dependent on the Lord, because you saw as soon as you establish them as an individual, then immediately then the idea is am I the controller and enjoyer? No, that they're dependent even as an agent. So you're trying to establish that the soul is eternal and part and parcel of the Lord, therefore they're dependent on the Lord, their natural position is servant to the Lord. If that's understood, then you actually understand Jiva. So okay.
Vaishnavas, they understand that.
Sorry?
The Vaishnavas, they understand that being a servant is the eternal upadhi.
The means, and you're using the upadhi to mean?
Designation.
Designation, yes.
It's correct.
It's not as so much a designation, it is, that is the inherent nature. Because the designation, then it's like you know, you can designate, okay, so these things will go in that room and that will go in this room.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, that's the inherent nature. That's why they generally don't use the term upadi. You know, it's not that Mother Yashoda is, you know, in the parental Ras with Krishna, that's her upadi. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So upadi is used here.
So when we say that the Jiva is an eternal parcel, that means that it could not have been the whole Brahman and then got covered by Maya.
Yes.
But don't we say that this word eternally to mean, for example, that we are eternally conditioned, that we were conditioned before kind of, you know, before the creation, in a sense.
Yes.
So in the same way, can the Mayavadis not say the same thing, that, you know, because there was no creation, there was no concept of time yet?
But do they have something before creation? No. In Brahman, that means, even you want to take that as a point, that means they had to be conditioned before Brahman got covered by illusion. So the point is, they existed then also.
But if there is no time, just like in the spiritual world, we say that there is no material time as such.
Yeah, so that's why it's a nadi. So how do you put a time to it?
Yeah.
So if there's no time, how can you say there's a beginning?
You can't.
Just like there's no time, there's no end. So only in the middle, then you have what's going on here, the condition that means becoming liberated. You're becoming freed from that conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
See, you don't have to worry that the Mayavadis are going to use these points, because they don't believe there's a spiritual world.
Okay.
So how would they accept that you're conditioned there? You understand? Because they don't have any concept beyond Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take everything else as within this material world. So that won't even come up as a point for them.
Okay.
Right. I mean, as it is, much of the time you see the devotees don't understand this point. You know, they take it, anadi is eternal, therefore the soul was always conditioned. No, anadi here means it's beginningless. You have to know how the word's used. You know, like if I say, wow, that bag's boss. Okay, does that mean that bag's in charge here?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is one has to know the language, how it's used by the acharyas.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say anadi, it means beginningless.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that's the way it always has been.
Mm-hmm.
Is that making sense? Yeah.
Okay.
So one has to be very careful with these things. But when you have grammarians, then they just fight over the words, because that's all they have. But the difficulty is that they don't use the Abhida Shakti, which means the direct meaning. They use the Lakshana Shakti, which, when you use the Lakshana Shakti, Abhida Shakti doesn't work. The direct, when you use the indirect interpretation, the direct meaning doesn't work. So they can never actually understand what the direct meaning is. You have to know what tools they're using. You could say, no, but they're intelligent, they can understand, but they're using the wrong tool.
Mm.
Right? I don't use pounds or kilos.
Oh, pounds mean.
Okay, so if you had one of those 5-pound hammers, you know, I think they call them the sledgehammers, right? So now if you come into the kitchen with that, are you going to get finely sliced potatoes? No. So it doesn't matter how intelligent you are. The tool's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't matter. Even if you very delicately just tap the potato, you're still not going to get thin slices. Or you think, well, I got it. I'll just hit it so hard that it becomes so thin. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's not going to work. So since they're using the indirect meanings, they're using mental speculation, they can't get a direct meaning, no matter how smart they are. So that's the whole point. Just even you're looking at it from the logical side. Then you have the point is that since you're talking about transcendence, it has to be empowered by the Lord anyway. So that means without the chit shakti, you won't understand. So they have two things against them. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, if someone has two strikes against them, you start to get worried. So, okay. I'm not sure how many you get in cricket, but one, and that's it, one. Wow, strict. So that means the Americans are quite liberal then. Very liberal. You get three strikes. So. You get hit by the ball, do you get the walk in cricket?
No.
You just sit there and rub wherever it hit. That's all the more benefit you get. Okay. can. Okay, so we're all good. The Smritis also give details of the sarup of the jiva. Jnana shrayo jnana gunas chaitana prakrite para najato nirvikaras cha eka rupas sarupava. The jiva is knowledge itself, has the quality of knowledge, is conscious, is superior to prakriti, is not born, does not change, is similar to others of its class, and has its individual form. Anur nityo vyapti shilash chid anandat makas tata aham arto vyayashakshi binna rupa sanatanaha. The jiva is atomic, eternal, pervasive, composed of knowledge and bliss, has the sense of I, does not diminish, is a witness, is separate from other jivas, and is permanent. Yeah, so it doesn't diminish, so they're not all pervading and then they become just small. That means they're always individual. Like that. So pervasive means that they're everywhere. Right? Or pervasive here means they pervade the body that they're in. Means they know the length and breadth of the body that they're in. Outside that, they don't really know what's going on. But that brings in the, what do you call it? The Artha or Martha. What do you call it?
Conundrum.
Yes. No?
Artha or Martha conundrum.
That is an Australian aphorism. I don't know, Australian would be the wrong word. Right? Straya? Yeah. Okay. Adahyo, Chedyo, Kledyo, Shoshyo, Kshara, Eva, Cha. Evam Adi, Guner, Yukta, Sesha, Bhuta, Parasya, Vai. The jiva cannot be burned, cannot be cut, cannot be moistened, cannot be dried up, cannot be destroyed. The jiva is endowed with these and other qualities. It is an amsha, a servant of the Lord. Ma kare no chate jiva kshetra gya paravansada dasa bhuto harer eva nanyasyaiva kadachana. The syllable ma of om indicates the jiva who knows his body and is always dependent on the Lord. The jiva is a servant of the Lord and of no one else ever. Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, 226, 34 through 37. There's Padma Purana. Yeah. So, you know, quite clear. So he's mentioned Gita, now he's mentioned the Padma Purana. The phrase evam adi gunahi, endowed with thus and other qualities, means that the jiva is also the agent, enjoyer, and self-luminous, aware of himself, right? Because you're conscious of that you have, that's why you have the concept of I. That's why he says self-illuminating. You can tell who you are. You don't get muddled up and can't tell who, you know, if you're Arthur or Martha. Yes. Prakasha, illumination, knowledge, is of two types, concerning quality and substance. The first, concerning quality, is the ability of a quality to manifest its shelter. The quality manifests the object in which it inheres. The second is a particular substance, which is the cause of manifesting itself and other things. This is the Atma. A flame reveals the eye and reveals its own form by itself. It is not like the illumination of a pot, which depends on the flame to reveal its form. Thus, the flame illuminates itself, or is self-illuminating, swayam prakasha. However, the flame does not reveal itself to itself. It is not aware of itself, but reveals its form to a person with consciousness, since it is unconscious of itself. Atma reveals others and also reveals itself to itself, right? Because the flame is dead matter. So even though the flame reveals something else, it doesn't reveal itself. But the Atma reveals itself and can reveal others. That's why you can discuss Krishna consciousness with other souls and reveal to them who they are. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise you could talk all day to the flame, it wouldn't actually understand. Yeah. Therefore, that which reveals itself to itself is the Atma, which is Chidrupa, a form of consciousness. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:13, 11-12. From beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. Yeah, so you have material life, you know, so here in this, because we're talking Bhagavatam, then we're talking about, you have the whole system of karma, the Varnashram system. And so then one performs those activities that maintains the body, right? By the performance of duties within Varnashram, your position is maintained. But we also see is that it's recommended one doesn't become attached to this, because the problem with the aspect of dharma here, it gives dharma, right? Dharma produces dharma, right? You invest money, what do you get? Right? Money. Does that make sense? So, you put in time with dharma, you get dharma. So, the problem is you'll just keep going in that cycle. So now, by being detached, you perform the dharma, it gives those facilities, but you're not attached to the results. So that naishkarmya, that will free you from that material entanglement. Right? So the same position is you're performing the activities of karma but without attachment, so therefore they don't give you more karma, they give you liberation. Does that make sense? So by being situated in the external form in the dharma, but by the mentality, one's detached. Right? That'll give you liberation. Right? But now, you do that whole process that you're engaging those activities without attachment in the Lord's service. Right? That process is Yukta Vairagya, but that is bhakti. So that gives you the transcendental position. So the same activity, the same endeavor will give you bhakti, or will give you liberation, or will just give you material facility. Right? But if you're getting bhakti, you're already getting the liberation and the material facility. Because it's the same work. Right? Means we're happy if one work will give us one result. But here in bhakti, one work will give you three results. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what's going on here. So they're doing that about these narrations that encourage the renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes. So they encourage you to perform your duties without attachment, so that gets you out of the material world, but then it gives the nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which attract you to the spiritual world. It's a complete process. Right?
Well, she mentioned earlier that by performing work without attachment, then you call that Yukta Vairagya, that's the...
No, it's when it's used for the Lord we call it Yukta Vairagya. Otherwise that's called Naishkarmya.
Okay.
Right? When you perform your duties properly as it is, it's Varnashram, it's your duties. It gives you karma.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered, you know, proper, pious activity. Not following your duty, that's akarma, and going against the duty, that's vikarma. Right? So karma is there. But then when you give up that, Then it's akarma. So that's the nishkarmya. You're doing it without, or nishkam karma yoga, if you're used to that. But the point is that the actual nishkam karma yoga is devotion, because otherwise there is a motive in nishkarmya in that they want liberation. But bhakti means you just want Krishna's satisfaction. So it's actually without motivation. The other one, it doesn't have your standard material motivation, but it's still a motivation. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. As well as nectarian accounts of Hari's transcendental pastimes, so she gives ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam to those situated in pure goodness and goodness, then they'll appreciate. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality. One without a second. This goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. Right, so that's what you're trying to obtain. Right? Adhikarana 16. The avatars of Brahman are not like the jivas, for the avatars are Brahman. Right? In other words, Krishna is his body. Matsyadya Dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.3.44-48. Adhikarana Kashika. The Advaitins posit the equivalence of Jiva and the avatar of the Lord. Right? So now that didn't work in these other things. Now they're going to try another approach. Right? So already a few varieties, the ways to become God, or you are God, now have been removed. So now they're trying a different way. Okay. The Advaitins posit the equivalence of Jiva with the avatar of the Lord with the intention to either deny God, I am the controller, or of becoming God, I am the enjoyer. Here, in this Adhikarana, the Sutakar disproves the opposition's assertion as follows. Assertion. Okay. The individual soul, spirit soul, cannot be equated with the Supreme Lord's avatar forms, no more than the light of a firefly can be equated with the light of the sun. In the concluding pada of the concluding adhyaya in Vedanta Sutra 4.4.21, Boga Matra Samya Linga Cha, it is verified that the jiva is not equal to the Lord because there are indications that equality refers only to their propensity for enjoyment and not to their sarup. Right? So we have to know how the definition is being given. Does that make sense? So you have to see the context, because it's not that it goes in all places. You're going into some place, and so then somebody else comes who might have some difficulties or anything, so you let them go first. So then they might define that you're a nice guy. Okay? But you can only use it in that context. Because outside of that, what he does in other areas may not be nice. Right? So then when it says that Jiva is equal with the Lord, meaning here it means that they have the same qualities, but not the quantity. So you can't take that it's everything. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone, you know, you have a very good friend and then they have some problem and this and that. And yeah, you can come over whenever you want, you know, what is it? How's it called? Something Mikasa. Oh, Sukasa. Yeah, my house is your house. And so then, what if they take that literally and the next day you see, you know, the big U-Haul truck move up and they move all their furniture and kind of move your stuff over the side and all the kids come in and their relatives and, you know, all that, and they start setting up. And so is that what it meant? No, the context is that because you're friends, if you ever have a problem, we're here. It doesn't literally mean this is your house. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, otherwise there would, yeah, it's not proper. The reason then, the Smriti Shastras, of which Srimad Bhagavatam is the best, declare the avatars to be direct, plenary, and subplenary expansions of the Supreme Lord, whereas the individual souls are expansions of the Supreme Lord's Tattva Shakti. Right? So they're directly expansions of him as Vishnu Tattva. Well, the Jiva is an expansion of his energy. Right? He has a Sarup Shakti. Sarup Shakti has three aspects, internal, external, and marginal. We're an expansion of the marginal. That makes sense. So you can't really equate. While the others are direct expansion or expansion of his direct expansion. So it's still him.
There is no equality as such, because we can say in terms of Tatastha Shakti Antaranga and Bahiranga, in terms that we are just one third of the whole. So there is no equality as such.
Yes. But we're coming from one third, because we're not the Tatastha Shakti. We're a 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair of an unlimited Shakti.
Mm.
So the proportion gets really small, yes.
So Maharaj, the avatars being a direct expansion of Krishna himself, does that imply that they also possess the same three Shaktis?
Yes, yes. I mean, they're all the same. The difference is that they have a mood of service to Krishna. So they are Krishna, but they have that mood of service because they're taking care of an aspect, you know, within the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis, like that, for the arrangement of the Lord. So that's always happening. But even within that, because it is the Lord, then there'll always be the aspect of, even Vasudev is an expansion of the Lord who has that element of service. You'll still have that principle where Shankar, Shankar, Prajum, and Adi Ruda are serving Vasudev. Right? But same time as all four of them are serving Krishna.
So each of the avatars having their own Tattva Shakti, is that why each avatar has his own devotees?
I mean, it's one Tattva Shakti, but it may mean that, it would be that a particular jiva has a particular incarnation to worship the Lord in a particular way. Therefore, you'll connect him with that deity. But the point is all those deities are Krishna. Right? So we don't separate that much. So if you have a chinta veda veda tattva, it's not absolutely one or absolutely different. There's always that aspect that both are going on at once. You shouldn't make so much distinction, because it's Krishna who's doing it. That's why you see is that all our paintings of Vishnu and that, they all have peacock feathers. Because it's Krishna who's Nisringadev, Krishna who's that. You know, so from the verses of the Dasavatar, Keshava Drita Nadahari Rupa, like this. You know, Keshava Drita Minakarira, like this. So it's Krishna who's there. So the devotees of Krishna see it's Krishna who's come in this form. Right? Because like Lord Maharaj, it's not like when Nisringadev shows up as, who are you? You know, I worship Vishnu. He knows this is his Vishnu, but he's just taken this form. Is that? So we don't make so much of a distinction. Sometimes a strong distinction will be made, but it's not actually appropriate.
Okay.
Like that. So we don't have to take it that far. You know, because otherwise then it brings up the elements of insecurity is I don't have any free will, I'm stuck there and all that. Well, what if I want to, you know, be part of another avatar? You know, so it's like, you know, right. You know, it's like a, you know, it's like a, yeah. It's just, it doesn't happen. Thank you. You know, it's like a hand an ice cream cone to a kid. And, but, you know, but what if he wants to eat, you know, a boiled Corella? You know, yeah, it's not going to happen.
The jivas, they manifest from the Tatastha Shakti. And yesterday we also saw that the jivas are manifesting from Mahavishnu. And then we also saw in Bhagavatam that Sankarshan is a representation of the all the jivas together. So then how do all the three go Like, how does it happen? Like,
how does it happen?
Because representation is one thing, manifestation is something.
And at what time?
No, Maharaj. Like, manifestation is one thing, representation is another thing. And then we have the tetrasession.
Are all these avatars not Krishna?
They are.
So then what's the problem? Why do we need to know the breakdown? It means what's the motive behind that? What's the intent?
I want to answer someone's question.
Yes, but what's their intent? Well, you want to answer their question, but what's the point of their question?
The point of the discussion was all about... Shall I give the explanation?
No, because we've discussed this threadbare, you know, many, many times. So just use the information that we gave.
Because it was all about the fall of the jiva, you know.
I said we've discussed this a million times. Mm-hmm. So the whole point is it's like this. Who wants to be the Shudra?
No one.
Okay. Now let's say you go to school. You go to IIT Bombay. Okay? Top marks. You come out. You go and are the IT, top IT man working in some big company in Bombay, and you're getting a six-sum figure per month. Okay? Is he in a prestigious position according to Bombay?
Yes.
Very good, no? But according to Varnashram, what a Varna is he? He's a Shudra. So now, does he want to be identified as a Shudra, especially since his background is he's a Brahmin? And most likely from South India? Right? No. So therefore, then we avoid all. It's all about prestige. So the thing is why should I be from Mahavishnu or from Balarama? I have to be from Krishna because I am the greatest. You know, it's the, what do you call it? You know, since we're into aphorisms, it's the Muhammad Ali aphorism.
It didn't turn out so good for
him. No, it didn't. It didn't turn out so good for him. You know, so that's the whole point, is that it's all a matter of material prestige. You'll either understand it or not. That's why it said this is not a topic for discussion. You know what I'm saying? So that's all. You can't answer their question because it's not about actually wanting to know. It's about social prestige. I have to come from the top. I'm the best, so I come from the best, what I consider the best position. Tatasta means it's neutral. If it's neutral, do you have love for Krishna? It's not a trick question. If you're in a neutral state, do you have love for Krishna?
Love is neutral.
Hmm?
The love is only neutral. The love is neutral.
How? And now the love is neutral? Oh. Gentlemen, you now have your answer.
I'll
pull it out whenever you want. Yes, I said. How can we do that? It's neutrality in love. You forgot, you know, whatever it is, the anniversary. It's a neutral love. Love is prema. Brahma-bhuta is the neutral position. Why are you equating the two? Right? So, it's in the neutral position. There is no love. If you have love for Krishna, you can't fall from prema. So if you're here in the material world, it means you never had prema. Right? Okay. So prema means Braja Krishna. If we're simply looking at it from the neutral standpoint, it's an official position. So who's official? That's Mahavishnu. But as soon as you have developed prema, then you're connected with Krishna. It's wherever you are. This whole thing is no, because all is all in a beginning and this, and it's all based on time and space and prestige and position. So that's why it can't be answered. Because the person will not understand. Because how do they understand this stuff? Right? So that's the whole thing. And then they have to make a whole thing out of it and this and that, you know, make something so important out of something that's not important at all.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. No. So you're saying that aphorism wouldn't work? No? Okay. Not in your experience. Okay. In his future work, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 3359, Bhumna Kratu Vaj Jya Yastvam Tata Hi Darshayati explains from a natural devotional standpoint that possession of many forms is the best quality of the Lord, pervading everything like the sacrifice. This is called, stated in Shruti. The Lord, like a Vaidurya gem, has many different forms. Endowed with those forms, the one form is called by many names. Right? So it's just, he's one person, but it appears as different forms, because it's just taking on the natural qualities that he has, that he's manifesting at that time. And so then a particular form is there to manifest, like he's angry, so then you have the form of Nisringadev. Does that make sense? But it's still him. So the example is given like the Vaidurya gem. You look at the Vaidurya gem, it's constantly changing color and the designs and everything like that, but it's one gem. It's not many gems. Right? You all had experience with the, that Vaidurya gem you keep in that your drawer and that, right? Yeah. No?
In the Brahmacharya ashram.
Yeah. In a plastic bag, but make sure it's always the one that's super crinkly, makes lots of noise. You know, you know, you'd probably get people to stay more in the Brahmacharya ashram if the temples, you know, all that have Brahmacharya ashrams, would find the companies that make plastic bags that aren't crinkly, you know, they're just soft, make no noise and all that, buy it in huge bulk, and, you know, send them out to your temple, and those are issued the brahmacharis, and they can only use those bags, not crinkly bags. You probably get more people stay brahmachari for longer. No?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So mention this to your temple presidents. See what he thinks. Endowed with those forms, the one form is called by many names. Also, in Vedanta Sutra 3.2, 11-12, Na stanatopi parasyo bhaya linga sarvatarahi and na bedhad idichen na pratyekam atad vachanat. It is explained that the Lord does not have two forms, even though he is in different places. Though the places are different, the person located there is not different, since the one form can appear simultaneously everywhere because of inconceivable power. Because if he's everything, that means, and everywhere, that means wherever he's situated is still in himself. It's not a different place. Does that make sense? So there's, yeah. So the whole point is he's something different. You know, he's not like energy. He's energetic. He's different.
Maharaj, so because of his quality of being all pervading, it is possible for him to manifest energy in any kind of different locations. So, all pervading aspect is.
Yes. Shruti states that all the forms are not different from the Lord. This evidently classifies the individual souls as candidates for bondage to matter and liberation from matter, but the avatars are always transcendental and descend to deliver the conditioned souls, and therefore belong to a different category. This validates that the conditioned souls are imperfect and should never be mistaken for the all-perfect avatars of the Supreme Lord. While it is a fact that the avatar and the living entities are amsas, expansions of the Supreme Lord, it is foolish to argue that they are therefore equal. Footnote 71. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the faults of Mayavad philosophy. Rajanath, what is this Mayavad philosophy? My intelligence does not understand it. He doesn't have to worry. No one's does. Right. Babaji, try to understand it soberly and carefully. The Maya Shakti is a perverted reflection of the Sarup Shakti, internal potency. The Maya Shakti cannot enter the spiritual world. The Maya Shakti is the controller of the material world. Right? So that's a key point there. The Maya Shakti cannot enter the spiritual world. Right? But you have the jivas who are spiritual in a material body. How does that happen? Right? Because in the spiritual world, then we see that's, you know, how you say it. So that's the Tathasta Shakti, right? Now you have Krishna in his spiritual form with his eternal associates, and there into Vrindavan walks one of the demons. Are they in a spiritual body? No, they're in a material body. How is it that demon and Vrindavan, Gokul Vrindavan, can be at the same place at the same time? Tathasta Shakti. So, the point is in the spiritual world, we don't distinguish the Tathasta Shakti. It's considered that it is iron and fire, right? Like that. So, where do you see that you could have the material, the jivas, you know, how you say, being in a neutral state, and even take on material consciousness, while being situated not in within the material world?
Brahma-bhuta platform.
Brahma-bhuta platform, but where is that manifest where that opportunity is there?
That's
the Bhoma-lila. So if we're talking with Bhoma-lila, we're not talking of Goloka.
Yes.
And so if we're not talking of Goloka, we're not talking of Braja-Krishna in Goloka. Right?
Yes.
Right. So, therefore, this whole idea is that, you know, no, but I have to come from there. But you didn't. Nobody does. Okay? Yeah. Because if you're conditioned, then you came from the neutral state, which is here, so you're not coming from Krishna. Those souls that, they're manifest in the Tathasta Shakti, and they take up devotion to Krishna and attain prema, that's a different position. But we didn't, so get it together.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the guys in the prison trying to claim that they're so prestigious.
Therefore, can we say that that Tathasta is not a location as such?
No, it's an energy.
Okay.
That's the point, is time and space. So because if one is overwhelmed by time and space, you can't understand this point. That's why it's useless to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those who this is an issue, you can't discuss it with them because they're seeing it according to time and space.
Mm-hmm.
I remember discussing this regularly, hours at a time, over 3 years with someone who's you know, quite scholarly. Like that. It took him 3 years to catch it. You know, and that was with regular discussion, in class, out of class, like that. So it's not going to happen with, you know, just your general wallers.
You mentioned about the jivas in the Tathasta, they can also, like, they can also choose to attain the prema. Like,
yes.
They would be, like, nitya siddhas.
We would call them nitya siddhas, yes.
Is there any factor that will decide which way the jiva will kind of clean?
It's desire.
Okay. Like the internal desire of the jiva.
Which means it's my fault.
Yeah, which means it's our fault.
In the material world, like the material desires we acquire from outside. So in the Tathasta...
Yeah, it's consciousness, whether you want to be Krishna conscious or not. That's consciousness, that's not from the outside. I want to be the controller and enjoyer, that comes from the inside.
And in the tatastha position, is there any, there is no influence of the material energy at all?
No, it's just there. You want to take advantage, you do, and if not, then...
It's basically like depend on the desire of the jiva, whether it wants to be influenced by the material energy or not.
Yeah. It's just a matter if you're willing to look at Krishna's energy without Krishna, then that's Maya. And if you always look at Krishna's energy with Krishna, then that's transcendental. The Maya Shakti is the control of the material world. Because he is bewildered by ignorance, the soul enters the material world. Spiritual things are real and do have an independent, separate existence. However, the Mayavad theory does not accept the reality of spiritual things. The Mayavadi theory declares that the individual soul is actually Brahman and it is only by the influence of Maya that he thinks he is different from Brahman. The Mayavad theory declares that as long as he is under Maya's influence, the soul thinks he is an individual soul. But when he becomes free of Maya's influence, the soul learns he is actually Brahman. Right? So being Brahman doesn't mean that you're still not a part of Brahman. But they take it as soon as you're Brahman, then you're everything. You know, so this is, it's a problem. You know, it's just like, let's say you have persons who... they get a little facility and they maintain their decorum, right? They deal with it properly and everything like that. But you find that there are those who, as soon as they get a little facility, they get really puffed up and, you know, somebody praises them, so now everybody, and now they're special and fabulous and all that. Right? So that's the problem. That's Mayavadis. As soon as they understand that there's that transcendental aspect to them, now they're God, they're everything like that. So they couldn't be God as the enjoyer, so at least they can be, I'm God, I just am. So that's the problem. They can't just appreciate that we're non-different, but we're different. We're Brahman, but we're an umsa. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. I think he's walking back and forth a lot. So. We'll stop here. Continue. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.